Welcome back to the Hockey House Podcast, episode 138, presented by our friends at Optimex Sports. I'm your host, Mackenzie Murphy, as we bring you all the latest news from the ACHA and AAU college hockey offseason. We have a full house for episode 138. David Herman, our executive producer, joining us, Conference Gerald and Aiden Collins joining us as well. We'll throw it over to Collins first. Collins, first and foremost, congratulations. The most recent Villanova graduate. Pretty crazy to hear those words come out of my mouth, because it feels like we've been doing this for so long and talking about graduation creeping up on you in senior year. And now here you are back in Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, I'm stoked and a little bit sad. It was weird packing up, you know, leaving the hockey house, just like, oh, I'll be back next year. And then you're like, oh, no, I won't be back in August, looking for jobs. And it's weird just to be back at home and like not have anything to do, really.
I remember being in a similar situation when my internship ended. How hard are you on yourself right now to like get up and like be active and go job hunt? Or are you like trying to give yourself a couple of weeks here to enjoy the, you know, the marathon that has ended?
I mean, I'd say I'm doing a mix of both. I was in New York last week at JP Morgan for a Villanova networking event, but also just trying to have some time to myself, play golf, go running, all that stuff. From what I've been told from all the alumni that I've met, you know, just other people in the marketing communications space, that it'll all work out. That's kind of the only thing kind of keeping me going here as I keep the job search going.
I mentioned it before the show, but I'm going out to Seattle this weekend to see one of my best friends, Matt Zarb, who is my roommate at Syracuse. And, you know, we lived together in the hockey house for 2 years, and he was that guy. He had a job locked up in Seattle. I want to say by the time he stepped on campus as a senior. And so he would always come to my room on like a Wednesday or Thursday night and like knock on my door and see if I wanted to go out. I'm like, dude, like I have to graduate and go to class and do all that stuff so I can get a job. It was the equivalent of like in the NFL when they throw the flag and you get a free play. Looking forward to seeing him this weekend. But I know the struggle of talking to friends and having that locked up well in advance. Us communications majors, we got to stick together on that end of things. But there is a familiar face on the other side, because I see the childhood bedroom of Colin Fitzgerald, which means he is back home. Fitzy, how you doing?
I'm doing great, boys. Finally back home. Just chilling up here, looking out at a nice rainstorm going on in the great suburbs of Chicago. Kind of like Colin's, just regrouping and, you know, went for a nice walk today. And it was cool just to breathe in the air and not have to worry about anything else. So I've started a Batman game, Batman Arkham Asylum. I will be 100%ing that game until I do anything else. So we're going to go see my brother this weekend play in Indianapolis. That'll be fun to watch him play some baseball. And then we got the College World Series getting going. And I like what I see in a segment later in the episode. So I'm doing good.
That's awesome here. And you know what I like seeing is being on a call with you guys and seeing sunlight coming through all the windows. I think it's been a while since we recorded this early in the day, a little 6:30 p.m. start time East Coast. And I think that's good. And it's got David Herman smiling, so we'll throw it over to him next.
First day in the office with summer hours. We left at 3 o'clock today. That was wonderful. Getting to get home and breathe for a little bit. So nice, so refreshing. There's still a ton of work that I have to do even as we get out early, but I will be watching some hockey with my coworker and our videographer, Nick Spina, tonight. So very, very excited for another game. We've got our little pregame superstitions that we go through. We've got a meal that we have every single time that we watch the games. It's an experience.
I gotta know what's the go-to meal. Or it might not even be the go-to, but what is the superstitious meal right now?
There's a taco place that we go to. We get tacos for each other. We just alternate who pays, so like it all evens out in the end. Like I'll go one game and then he'll go the next. It's the perfect viewing experience.
That is phenomenal to hear. I thought the lacrosse season was going to be done Memorial Day weekend. That's what I signed up for when I signed up to coach JV lacrosse, but the varsity team clinched a spot in the playoffs, so the JV guys are still coming to practice this week, just so varsity has enough guys to, you know, run a full practice. If they need to scrimmage, they can do that as well. But we had our JV end of season tournament on Saturday, and we started off 2-0, which is a bummer. We ended up going 2-2-1, so not a great afternoon for us, but we made it to the semifinals of this jamboree, and it's the furthest our high school has ever made in this tournament. So I'm going to pat myself on the back as a job well done in the JV lacrosse sector of the world. I had my last day of work a week ago, And so it's been nice. I have an arrangement of sticky notes on my desk with like things to do. And I'm looking down now as we hit record, and like almost all of them are crossed off as I get ready for my trip before I start my new job next week. So very exciting time. There's nothing better than just like checking things off and getting things done and relieving that stress. So hoping to tackle a couple more of those things tomorrow and a nice end of the work week. Going to get to see a lot of the Syracuse guys this weekend who I haven't seen since alumni weekend. When you get to be an adult, you have these like benchmark events that you get to see all your friends at. Like I had, you know, a wedding I got to go to in the fall, and then alumni weekend. And so this is kind of the next thing on all of our calendars. So I'm certainly enough talk about my plans to the West Coast. Let's talk about Grand Canyon University's plans for the West Coast. GCU announced they have scheduled an NCAA exhibition series in Alaska to start off next season. They will start the 2024-25 season with a trip to Alaska to take on Alaska Fairbanks and Alaska Anchorage. The games will be played in, I'm assuming, Fairbanks and Anchorage on September 27th and 28th. GCU captains Hunter Schmitz and Jacob Cummings are both natives of Alaska, which I thought was pretty cool. They had a really cool rollout of that. Herm, it's now 2 weeks in a row where the lead is an ACHA M1 team from the West Coast with big news that they're scheduling an NCAA opponent.
We've come a long, long way, and I still think there's a long way to go. I think it's a testament to the original step that the Denver coach took in scheduling UNLV. Hopefully this becomes much, much more commonplace. And then ultimately, we see those more elusive ACHA M1 NCAA D3 matchups. I think that is the next logical step. It is right around the corner.
That definitely seems to be a popular comment in the comment section when we do these announcements is, you know, hey, how come we're not getting an ACHA team versus a Plymouth State or an ACHA team versus a Hobart, which I mean, Hobart, that would be a tough one. You know, they're practically a Division I team. Those middle of the road D3 teams, I think, would definitely be great. So a couple of quotes here we have from Schmitz and Cummings, both the Alaska natives. Schmitz said, "I'm super excited. I think I went to every Anchorage game growing up. I think it will be a cool experience to be able to play them, especially with friends and family there to support." And then Cummings said, "I'm excited to be able to go back to my hometown and play in front of my friends and family like that. I know it's super great for the program, and it's amazing to be a part of that. Since my freshman year, we've gone from playing ACHA D2 teams to NCAA Division I teams. I think it's a great step for the program, and it's only going to keep building off of that." Great point from Cummings there. I mean, they literally opened the season last year against Northern Arizona, who's a Division II team in the ACHA, and they will open up next season with two NCAA Division I opponents. So that is certainly going to be an exciting thing to look out for. Herm, I want to throw it over to you for some other pretty big news here. You were kind of doing a deep dive on this one, kind of a weird one out of the blue today, an announcement that Eastern Michigan will not be returning for 2024-25. What do we know about this situation?
Yeah, this was literally breaking news as I stumbled upon it. We have an account where we look chronologically for things, especially as we're gathering the notes, and I caught this literally the minute that it was posted. No notifications or nothing. It just happened to be at the top of the timeline. And we reached out to someone with knowledge about the Eastern Michigan program, and he said, "Being one of the longest tenured teams in the ACHA, I would love to see the program continue to run and thrive. Unfortunately, due to no financial support from the university, as well as the hiring of a former GM who made some awful financial choices without the sign off of a coach or team president, our hands were tied in making this decision. We would love to return in the future, but some major changes need to happen within Eastern Michigan University before that is a possibility." This is just an unfortunate situation just because of how nice the facility is that they play at. It was always baffling to me that Eastern Michigan really could never put it together. It's a shame to see them go.
I hope the university takes a good hard look at the sport that kind of dominates the entire area over there, and it's just the nature of the beast, I guess, at times.
I'm thinking about now, you know, what's the solution here, because Herm mentioned they do play at the Ann Arbor Ice Cube. It is the former home of the national development team before they moved their operations over to Plymouth after the Plymouth Whalers left the OHL. I believe that's the correct hockey timeline there. So the old locker room that the development team have, you know, old training facility and big shoes to fill there. But I wonder if when they bring the team back, which I'm sure they will eventually, like I wonder if they're going to explore the M3 level. There's so many M3 teams in Michigan. They've been at the bottom of ACHA M1 for a number of years now. That maybe seems like a happy medium. You don't have to bring in that high level talent that would be expected to carry an M1 team. And then you can kind of build it from there. And then I think, you know, if you want to make the jump, certainly you can go back to M1. But I think the Great Lakes Conference certainly taking a hit here, because one of the teams that's been a staple is leaving that after some of the top teams in that conference left for the Great Lakes Six. In other news, Gonzaga is looking for a goalie. The ACHA M2 team is looking for a netminder between the pipes for next season. They put out a post on Instagram looking for one. They had a solid record last year, so could be joining a team on the come up. Did some investigating on this one. Applications are closed for next semester, so they're going to have to find somebody on campus who's willing and able to play goalie. Maybe somebody who played high school hockey and hung them up. They can come out of retirement. If you're listening to this and you're looking for a place to play, you can apply for the spring semester. Those applications don't close until November. So maybe somebody listening to this could help them get some depth in the goalie position next season. And we'll turn things over to our portal update. Every now and then we see these graphics of former NCAA players committing to go play ACHA hockey or AAU college hockey. Sometimes it's the reverse of that. Every once in a while, we'll see a player get promoted and then, you know, transfer to an NCAA school. So we got a couple here. Former Concordia, Wisconsin forward Parker Williams is transferring to UNLV. So that's NCAA Division III to ACHA M1. The West Bloomfield, Michigan native last played in 2022-23, where he appeared in 12 games for the Falcons as a freshman. So he appeared two seasons ago for Concordia, Wisconsin. Looked it up. He was listed as playing for them last year on EP, was not on the NCAA roster, couldn't find him on the ACHA roster. So looks like he might have taken last season off, but returning to play for UNLV. CUW obviously has a very good ACHA D2 program, which sees a trickle down from their NCAA team as well. You want to talk about schools that have good NCAA teams and ACHA teams. Our next portal update comes from Adrian College. Former Adrian College defenseman Austin Klein is transferring to Minot State. So that is D3 to ACHA M1. The Manitoba native appeared in 32 games for the Bulldogs and recorded 10 points and appeared in back-to-back Frozen Fours. So Minot State bulking up on the blue line, getting Austin Klein here. He actually spent a season with the Portage Terriers in the MJHL, playing alongside current Beavers Joey Moffitt, Sheldon Howard, and Reese Henry. Helps being in the portal if you got a couple buddies playing at a different school, seeing a lot of success. Crazy here to see, Herm, I know you mentioned you reached out to Alex to see if he had any other intel on this one, and he mentioned that, you know, Klein might have some buddies on the Minot State team, and that is certainly true with a couple guys from the MJ here. But I mean, that this is a guy, 32 games is nothing to turn your nose up, but in the NCAA, a lot of times we see here guys transferring because they're getting scratched and they're not on the lineup a lot. Klein was in the lineup almost every game for the Bulldogs over the past two seasons, so certainly a huge addition for Minot State here. A couple more to go. Former Riviera University forward Austin Finch is joining NC State. He's going D3 to ACHA M2. He is a native of Raleigh, North Carolina, so this one checks out. He's going back home. He last played in 2021-22, where he had appeared in 11 games for the Raiders, a product of the EHL. And then last, we have former Salem State defenseman Andrew St. Julian, who is joining Toledo, ACHA M1. The Oregon, Ohio native appeared in 8 games as a sophomore for the Vikings. So two seasons NCAA Division III. He's also going back to his home state to play for Toledo. But Fitzy, I want to get your take on this too, because the cool thing that stands out to a couple of these transfers, and obviously we want guys to have, you know, the best experience they possibly can, but a lot of these guys play in Division III that maybe they're not getting the playing time they're getting. These situations we're looking at this week, it's guys transferring to maybe a school closer to home or a school that their buddies are playing at.
I was just going to say, I think this is one of my new favorite segments. I don't know. I think it's always cool when, you know, like you said, maybe it's not working out for the guys, and I can definitely relate to that kind of a situation, and just to kind of have the confidence to make that move and kind of bet on yourself and maybe find your love for the game again. That's I think it's really cool. You don't really understand it till you're in it. So kudos to these guys for I hope it works out for them and they're happy with the move.
Turning things over to another segment, we've got to give our stick taps to former guest and friend of the pod, Kian Hogan. Hogan recently signed a pro contract in Sweden for the 2023-24 season. In a statement from the Bishops men's hockey team, they said, "We are proud to announce that Bishops men's club hockey graduating captain number 5, Kian Hogan, has signed his first professional contract, and he'll be playing in Europe with the IFK or Frutal with the Hockey Sweden 3 League for the upcoming season. So best of luck across the pond. Hoagie, we'll be watching you from Lennoxville. Keen Hogan, a very good friend of the show, got to catch up with him at AAU College Hockey Nationals this year. He went viral for doing the tarps off interview, which I'm sure some of the people at AAU were not too pleased about him going no tarp for the post-game interview. If you want to hear more from our friend Kian, he was on episodes 31 and 68, so two of the earlier episodes, and was one of the first reoccurring guests of the show. I remember he reached out, you know, Bishops is in a unique situation where they're north of the border, they were playing CHF, and then CHF closed their chapter and rebranded as AAU, and they were pretty pumped up to go to Nationals this year, and I'm sure Kian is pretty pumped up to be heading overseas to play next season. Last segment before we cut to our break here, but it's time for the hammering a hot seat. I have a team going on the hot seat this week, and that is the University of Houston. I can't remember if this was Sunday or Monday, but I saw a post on social media coming from the official team account, which has had some struggles this past year. I know the Houston team went viral because I think they, Herm, did they fire their social media team midseason?
They fired their social media team after one game.
The social media has certainly raised some eyebrows. It raised some eyebrows over the weekend when they posted that they had won a men's league tournament in Houston. They posted the team photo with the banner from the tournament, as well as two different videos of a brawl that took place in the men's league tournament. Went to go include the link here for the show, and I'm happy to report that the videos have been taken down. The video was originally posted by the Houston account, and then it was reposted by our friends over at College Hockey Buzz. Guessing they must have gotten a little too many views on those videos, and somebody from the administration told them to pull them. But tough look for a team that I know they're trying to do everything they can, and it looks like they're playing this tournament so that to represent Houston in a men's league tournament in Houston. But we've talked about the show all the time. When you're a college age kid and you're playing men's league in the summer, you're wearing all your school gear. Like, you want to represent your school in the best way possible. You don't want to be an asshole out on the ice, right? You don't want to be the young guy who's flying around and, you know, taking slap shots and high sticking people, and you're wearing a cage, and you certainly don't want to be the college team that plays in a men's league tournament and gets into a brawl.
I don't know if anybody else experienced this when playing summer men's league with your college gear. It feels like it's at times too, you almost have like a target on your back too with the older guys. They're like, oh, I'm going to show these college kids how we did it back in our days. Glad to see the right steps were taken there with Houston.
I think I wore my Syracuse shell for all of one men's league game post graduation, and then I got so many comments about it in that first game that I immediately ditched it. You know, I obviously have the reflective orange fingertips that I still rock on the Bauer four rolls, so there's no hiding those. But yeah, it is definitely, especially in Houston's probably a little different. There's probably not as much ACHA traffic in the men's leagues down there. You know, certainly in those high congested areas where, you know, the Phillies, the New Yorks, the Bostons, when you're playing men's league in those areas and there's a lot more players with different, you know, ACHA or AAU decals out there, it's certainly a target on you. But whether you are an ACHA player or an AAU player, you can all benefit from our friends over at OptimX Sports. OptimX Sports provides teams the opportunity to build and manage their own website. And the best part is these guys know club hockey. So be sure to check them out using the link in our bio. If you're interested in signing up, be sure to use our referral link at optimxsports.com/signup/hockeyhousepod. Some teams that have recently hopped on the OptimX bandwagon, we have North Florida, Temple, Flow State Hockey, all getting sweet new websites with a professional looking feel. Very easy to set up. OptimX hooks teams up all the time, so be sure to check them out. Once again, that's optimxsports.com/signup/hockeyhousepod. Now we'll turn it over to our guest this week, the final interview in our champion circuit. We have Chloe Burt and Tess McCarro from Adrian College, the ACHA Women's One National Champions. We're pleased to be joined by members of the 2024 ACHA Women's Division One National Championship team from the Adrian College Bulldogs, junior captain Tess McCarro and senior netminder Chloe Burt. Ladies, welcome to the Hockey House.
Hello. Thank you.
So happy to have you guys on. I mean, has it even set in yet? All year long, we talk about like the women's side of things. If you had drawn up a better tournament, like it was one of the more exciting national tournaments we've covered in the last couple of years, especially on the women's side.
Yeah, it was super fun. I mean, I didn't expect the tournament to go that way for us at all. but I'm just happy it worked out in our favor.
Any championship team, like usually there's like a moment, maybe it's like in the preseason when you're doing like a workout, or maybe it's like after you beat somebody during the regular season. But with this team, was there ever like a feeling, was there ever a point in the season where it was like, hey, like this is a special group. Like, you know, this is the most fun I've had playing hockey. Is there like a certain moment that looking back now as national champions, like, hey, like that's kind of the moment it all clicked for us?
Right away, having all of the girls in the dressing room at once, I just noticed such a great dynamic between everybody. As a normal hockey team does, they go through their ups and downs, and we kind of had a little downhill slope at one moment, and then we went out to play Liberty for back-to-back games. We beat them in our first game against them, which was an incredible feeling. And right then and there, we just thought to ourselves, like, we can really do this. We just proved a point to ourselves and the league and our coaches. So from that moment on, I think that gave us a little boost of confidence. And we kind of just took it up a notch from there on and kept going uphill.
I think we saw like pieces of it like throughout the entire like season. There's like times when like we could be the best team, then like there's times we showed up and we were the worst team. I think the turning point for us was like, I think we went to, it was McKendree and Maryville weekend. We had a rough game against McKendree, and like we all kind of grouped together and we kind of just saw how bad everybody else wanted it. And so I think from there, that was like November, around November. And I think from there, everyone really just wanted to push and knew that we could have won at all.
Glad you brought up the Liberty weekend and how successful it was for your team, because in doing my research to this, I have to apologize to Chloe, because I feel like I may or may not have exposed you by posting those Liberty shootout goals second game.
So mad.
How many DMs did you get?
I had so many DMs. So many people came up to me at school. I was like watching the comments and I was just getting like ripped apart. I was like, this is like the worst case scenario. But I was like, in my mind, I was like, once we beat them in nationals and we win a national championship, then they can post about that. And that's what happened. So I'm just glad that it worked out that way, because that was rough.
I'm so glad we could get you on and we could clear that, because now it's like we can all look back and laugh at that. Because sometimes when we post stuff, it's like, I always post with the mindset, like, sometimes, you know, it's ACHA. It's like, are people going to care about this highlight? Like, what's going to happen? Like, sometimes it's going to get like a couple hundred likes. And then like that particular post, like I'm looking at now, it has 18,000 likes. Like that one blew up. We're always trying to do our best to promote like the women's side of it, because there's not as many women's ACHA teams as there are men's. We were like jumping up and down when we saw how well it was doing. But now I'm looking back and I'm like, oh, we did Chloe so dirty.
I mean, I give them all the creds, like they did great. It's funny looking back at it now, and I still laughed like right when I saw it. I was like, this is just so ironic, but it is what it is.
Well, Chloe, I wanna ask you now, because you mentioned that are you moved into St. Louis now?
Yeah.
At what point did you know that you were going to be going to school in St. Louis to get your chiropractor degree? Was that like weird being in St. Louis for nationals, or did this come after nationals?
So I knew last August that I was going to be coming to school here. Anytime we came down here for like games against Maryville and McKendree, and then when we came down here for nationals, I just like had the mindset, which is like, we better win, because I'm not going to want to step foot in the city if we don't win. And I have to be reminded by this every single day. But I love it here now and it's great.
What was the process like after you guys won? Was it like, we're rushing back to get back to Adrian? Like, did you have one more night at the hotel? Did you have a flight to catch? Like, what was kind of the chaos and the aftermath after the game?
It was a little mix of both. It was absolutely incredible, because we had so many family members and like even like just relatives and friends that were able to join us for that moment. After we won, it was just like so surreal. And everybody was like, I want to be with my family. I want to be with my hockey team. I want to be with my coaches and my trainers and everybody else who was there to support and just live in that moment forever. But then there's also a part of us that were like, I want to get back. I want to see the men's team, because they just won before us. And like, we can all be together and celebrate and like go through the victory together. From my perspective, like, it was just a big mix of emotions, because we just want to do everything and anything. And we also just wanted to bring that trophy everywhere, literally everywhere with us.
I know this was like a big thing in the year before, because the way it was set up in Boston, like all the tournaments were going on at the same time. You guys were literally the last ACHA game of the season. Like, did you spend hours on that ice afterwards?
I didn't. My entire family drove down to see me. And so they wanted to get back on the road right after the game. And so I wanted to get out and see them. I love my team, but I'll get to celebrate with them. I don't get to celebrate with my family all the time. So I was on the ice for a little bit after, but then I got off right away just to say hi to my family and everything.
That's probably my favorite part when we go to the national tournaments and get to like witness this is like you guys play like especially at the ACHA level, right? Like our parents have kind of grinded, right, to get us to the point we are, and seeing the faces of these parents after these national championship games is it's irreplaceable. So I can only imagine what that must have been like for the two of you and your teammates as well. And I'm sure there was plenty of black and gold fans happy, whether they were going back to Adrian or all the way back to Canada. Chloe, like your family, I'm sure they had smiles ear to ear. All right, let's get into a little background here. And I'm going to throw it back to you, Chloe, because you played your first ACHA game before tests. So we got to go to you first. But kind of walk us through your journey growing up and kind of what led you down like the path of playing college hockey.
My like path is a little different than everyone. I kind of bounced around a little. So I grew up in Saskatchewan. That's where I'm from. We have to play our minor hockey league in Saskatchewan. And so I started out playing underage. I had to transfer to Alberta to play it. So I played in a prep league down in Alberta. And then my grade 12 year, it was kind of a rocky situation because that's when COVID hit. They took our playoffs away when I was down in Weyburn. I had a coach from North Dakota reach out to me right before our season ended from COVID. I wasn't going to play just because of COVID. It kind of made things like really rocky. I didn't know where the season was going to go next year. I kind of just bit the bullet. I went with the flow and I signed down with the team in North Dakota. I played there for 2 years. That first season for me, it was different. Like we didn't have all the rules that like Canada did for the D1 girls as well. Their whole season was also canceled the following year. I was able to play, I think I got 12 games in. It was really weird of a transition for me, but we made it work. And like, you know, it led me to where I am now. It was really different. I don't know how to explain it really.
Yeah. And that was at Dakota College, correct?
Yeah.
Is that a 2-year school? Like I'm looking at the roster and it's like all freshman, sophomore, right?
Yeah, it's a 2-year school.
I want you to share too, because it sounds like you have a pretty interesting path to playing goalie, right? Like when did you first step foot in the crease?
So it was like my friend's dad. I had like no interest in playing hockey. And then I think like when I was 12 years old, my friend convinced me to. My parents were like, okay, fine, you can try it out, but you're going to be a goalie, thinking that I was going to quit right away because I did not know how to skate. I didn't know how to do anything. And they're like, fine, like you can be a goalie. So I was like wearing skates that were like 3 sizes too big for me, like a helmet that was like so big on me. To my parents' surprise, I just like never quit and I just kept playing and it kind of just stuck. I really didn't have any other choice but to be a goalie.
Then it backfired on your parents because I'm sure once you got like the proper fitting equipment, you were an even better goalie.
I won't say they regret, but I don't think they like thought that I was going to stick with it and took into account how much money goalie equipment actually costs. And so they were shaking their heads for a little bit, but I think that they're happy with where I'm at now.
Love that. Love that. All right, Tess, let's move on to you. You grew up in Ontario, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. And what got you into hockey at an early age?
So I originally did not start off playing hockey. I kind of played like a variety of different sports. I did play ringette. So I played ringette kind of like Chloe, like very similar. I started when I was 11, 12, kind of later into the game. I had this moment with my dad. I distinctly remember because my dad played hockey all throughout his life too. And just to see how far he went, and he went to University of New Brunswick, and he played there. And I looked at him the one day and I was like, I want to do what you did. I want to move on from ringette where I know I don't really have like biggest future in this sport and I want to try something new and I want to kind of follow in your footsteps. He absolutely loved that. Obviously, he kind of ate that up. Like both my sisters, extremely talented females, love them to death, but they are not very sport oriented. For him to be like, okay, I have a daughter who's going to play hockey. Like this is so exciting. And from there on out, like I loved it. And I trained and I did whatever I could with him. And it was kind of just like this huge bonding experience. And I loved that. So from there on out, I just like kept going and led me to where I am now.
For those people who don't know listening, like, can you explain ringette? If you were looking at it from a distance, it's very similar to hockey, right?
Yeah. So ringette is based off of like skating. It's a lot of speed. If you were to compare it to hockey, it's also extremely different. You don't have a blade on your stick. You're playing with a ring. You got a lot of different rules in the neutral zone and defensive zone, everything. You got to pass before the, like, in front of the blue line to your other teammate. It is very different. It is extremely hard to learn how to stick handle. That was my biggest issue when transitioning to hockey. But yeah, so that's ringette.
The U8, U6 team that I coach loves when I break out the ring at the end of practice and we do like the cross ice ringette. But it's like, it's crazy to think like there are people playing that as an actual sport. So I will give you credit. I think you're the first ringette player we've ever had on the podcast.
I have something to add to Tess playing ringette. I bug her about it so much is that she will never lose her ringette shot. If you've ever seen a ringette player like shoot a ring, it's just like so like crazy to watch. And Tess, the way she shoots a puck is still the same way she shoots like a ringette. And it's so funny to watch, but it works for her. I don't know how, but it freaking works.
What about what Tess said about stick handling? Like, is Tess ever trying to deke on breakaways in practice, or does she know better?
She knows better. She knows better. Yeah, she just takes the puck and goes with it, or she passes it.
It's rare. It's definitely rare.
Tess, what led you to Adrian? You mentioned you wanted that college experience similar that your dad had at the University of New Brunswick. Where does Adrian College come into play?
I originally was committed to go to Laurentian University. It's out in Sudbury. So I was a late commit to Adrian because it was crunch time and Laurentian went bankrupt. And they ended up cutting the women's and men's hockey programs. And this was just like months before I was supposed to even go to school. So I was already getting mentally prepared for that. Because of COVID, it was very difficult for me to reach out to other schools and go to their like prep tryouts and trainings and even tour other campuses. I had a really, really good junior coach, Ed Morrow. He was my coach in Barry, who had a ton of connections already and did the most he possibly could. And he reached out to other schools for me. So I was going through Zoom calls and Zoom calls for like weeks at a time. It was very difficult to even like get out of that thought of like, oh, well, I'm not going to the school I was originally supposed to go to. And it just happened that one of the girls I played with in Barry had also committed to Adrian. And he was like, how do you feel about going to the States? Because I never really thought about it. I remember sitting there and being like, you know what? That would be a crazy turn of events. I would love to like talk to people or coaches and whoever that are in the States. Like, I would love to try that out. And I just happened to get the contact of our head coach at the time. And right away, I was like, I want to go. I love it. I loved the small school. It had the program I wanted to get into. And everything just started aligning. And they wanted to commit that year, which was even like more convenient for me because everybody else was like, we'll have to push it back. Like, we'll push it back a couple more years and then we'll have you on the roster. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to fall behind. And I kind of just wanted to like move on with my journey. It was a crazy opportunity that just like fell into my lap and I decided to take the chance.
So I got to ask, because I'm assuming if you're in that situation, you probably had the thought, hey, if I don't like it at Adrian after 1 year, I at least have another year to go look for another school. Was there a moment early on at Adrian where you're like, no, like this is going to be a really good fit?
The first week, all of the freshmen end up at the school to begin. It was like the first couple of days I met all of the other freshmen on my team and on the guys' team, and I met people in my program, and it was like instantly, I just knew, I was like, I'm gonna love it here, and I'm never gonna wanna leave. Like, I'm gonna wanna stay here, I'm gonna wanna stay as long as possible. I remember texting my parents being like, I just met all of the friends that I'm gonna have for life, and I'm gonna be so happy here. And they were like, done, perfect, like, we'll take it. So yeah, it was honestly like the first like couple days, even hours, if that.
We've had Adrian guys on a couple times now, and I feel like that sense of community is very important at a school like Adrian. I feel like it's community and it's like competition too. Like, it's a very tight-knit community and there's a lot of sports teams on campus.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
Chloe mentioned a little bit about Tess's playing style. Tess, I want to ask you a little about Chloe's playing style. Again, I mentioned I did my background info. I watched your 5-minute major with Rassi after the national championship game, and you mentioned how like comfortable Chloe is in net and gave your team confidence, like especially as the year went on. Is there like a tick that Chloe has that you know, like, oh, she's locked in today?
Oh, you can see it. You can see it in her eyes. And it's not even just on the ice. It is off the ice. Like, she walks into that dressing room and it's like, it clicks. It's game time. She's present. She's focused. You can just tell that, like, she's so mentally and physically prepared. Do not get in her zone. That's her. Like, let her have it. Like, this is going to be a great game. Like, we just know it.
Nobody crack a joke.
Yeah. Honestly, she does, which is the best part about it. She'll pull out some dance moves at the end of the line. Like, it is the best thing ever. And it, like, just reassures you, like, she's comfortable. She's dialed in, but she's not too, like, hesitant. She has that, like, space and time to, like, be present with your teammates and, like, still get a little loose, which is a very comfortable feeling for a player, especially like a forward or even a defense. And she's very like communicative. So when she is on the ice and she's still dialed in, you can hear it from across the ice. Like, we know what's going on because Chloe's back there talking to us, which is incredible.
Chloe, is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, she did a pretty good job.
You mentioned like picking up goaltending a little late. Like, was there an NHL goalie? Was there a goalie on like the Olympic team that you kind of looked up to as a kid that you've modeled your game after?
Not when I originally started. It wasn't like until like a few years into like me actually playing hockey where I started to enjoy watching hockey. And I think like the biggest person I looked up to was Emerence Mashmeyer. She's also from Alberta, and she plays for Ottawa now, and she played for Team Canada, and she was like also just like so fun and lively, but also so focused in the net. I just loved watching her play growing up.
I feel like that's becoming a little more common. Like, I feel like there's this stereotype that like goalies are like the crazy people on the team. I'm a Bruins fan, so I look at a guy like Swayman's our goalie, and like he's so focused all the time, but then he's also like the guy who's like smiling between whistles and like cracking jokes. I feel like we're kind of like at a turning point for goalies here. I feel like the personalities are starting to come out a little more.
Yeah, and I think it's so important as a goalie because goalies, like, they take a lot. Like, it's mentally tiring, and like if you can't balance being like serious and like having fun with it and like messing around, like it's just gonna eat you alive. So like if you have a good balance, like you're gonna help yourself and your team better.
Your transition to Adrian's a little different, right? Because you spent 2 years in Botno. Like, what was that intimidating coming in as a junior at a new college? Or like, was there kind of a moment for you where it kind of clicked, like, all right, this is gonna work out here at Adrian?
My first year at Adrian, I wasn't intimidated. I'm not a person that gets intimidated very easily. So I was like, I was very comfortable coming in. I didn't have the best season my junior year when I came to Adrian. I started out a little rough, and I don't know if it was because like of the transition from D2 to D1, but I had a rocky start, and then I got back on my feet for a couple games, and then my dad unfortunately got sick. And so that knocked me back like through the end of November, throughout the entire December. I got hurt the first week back into January, came back from that injury, and then I got sick. I can't even like compare like my junior year because like there are just so many ups and downs. It was a bad year for me, yeah.
I feel like that makes a little more sense because one of the facts I learned is you led the nation in games played. Did that kind of come from like the opportunity that you didn't get to play as many games junior year as you would have liked?
I kind of accepted like why I wasn't playing, and it wasn't because like I was having a bad season like as a goalie individually. I was just having a bad year personally, like family wise. Like, I made the transition from like 10 hours away from home to like 28, and so that was another like stepping stone that I had to get used to. So I kind of let go of the fact that I wasn't playing much my junior year. I did come into the season, and I will tell my coach this, I came in the season pissed off at him, not because I wasn't playing, but like it was a hard season and I like didn't know how to accept it. So I came in the season a little pissed off. I wanted to prove like I meant to be here. I just had a bad season. I did come in here mad, but then when I started like knowing that I was like doing fine and having fun with it, I was like, I'm not mad anymore. Like, I'm just here to have fun with it.
And now is that Coach Clark?
Yeah.
Does he know that now you're not mad anymore?
We still joke about it every now and then, but like he knows that I'm not mad about it. Yeah.
Tess, what is Coach Carter Clark? What kind of coach is he like when, you know, what's he like to play for? What's he like behind the bench during the games?
Carter is one of the most competitive human beings in the most respectful way possible ever. This man does not like to lose. Rightfully so. Nobody likes to lose. It is the worst feeling ever. But he will do anything in his power to make sure that he will not lose. That, honestly, as a coach and from our perspective as players, seeing that, he makes sure that us players are extremely disciplined. He articulates his words very well to make sure that there is zero to little confusion for what he wants from us and what he needs from us. But he is also very supportive. He knows what we need. He knows what we like to have, what we like not to have. And he's very accommodating in that way. He definitely is work-driven. He makes sure that we are on our high horses all the time. And there is no room for mistakes. We have to make sure that we are perfecting what we are doing, because if we are not, then we are evidently seeing it in our game. And he will show that to us when we mess up in a game, because we've done these drills and we've done those exact things in practice. And if we've messed it up, it's back to the drawing board and we're doing it again and we're going to practice it till we perfect it. But that is also very beneficial, because clearly that has brought us to the success that we've had all year. But he does have a soft side to him, but he will not admit it. But you will hear it first here.
There we go. I mean, I got to sit in on one of these locker room talks now, because now I'm fascinated. Chloe, would you echo what Tess had to say?
Yeah, definitely. To make it in like simpler terms, our assistant coach, Brian, we like refer to them as mom and dad. Like Brian was our mom and Carter was our dad. Like we'd go ask mom something first before we'd go ask dad, because we knew he was going to give us a hard time for something. And so we'd always go to Brian. We're like, is he going to be mad at us? Like, it was the best relationship ever.
That's what you need as a hockey team, though. You need like the mom, dad, good cop, bad cop. Like, as long as they can balance each other, like, you're usually in good hands. We got to talk about one of your teammates, MVP, Macy Pichet. What does she mean to the team? Because I both see you smiling right now. Like, Tess, I'll throw it over to you first.
Yeah, Macy is my centerman. I absolutely adore her. She is an incredible teammate. She's an incredible person. She has an incredible personality. Her and I on the ice have this like telepathy, this connection. And we always say it to each other. It's like we know where the person's going to be without having to say it. And that first goal in our final game, I saw her pick up the puck on the boards and I was gassed. And I was like, I have to get off. But I knew that she was going to pass me the puck if we got that 2-on-1. So I was like, I cannot leave because I know she's going to give it to me and I can't just leave her alone. So we go on this 2-on-1. She passes it over and I was like, oh, I knew it. But instantly I was like, I'm going to pass this back to her and this is going to be an amazing goal for her. Like she's going to set herself up perfectly. And that's exactly what happened. She is an extremely hardworking individual. She's always there to support. She knows her role. Love to have her on my line all the time.
Watching that national championship game, it was just cool to watch, because I think like gradually the way the game worked out, like late in that third period, it was like you can kind of see like the excitement that you guys had and what it meant. But I feel like we got to rewind a little bit here. I feel like we've talked about a lot of behind the scenes, but we got to talk about some of these games here. So you win your conference championship for the sixth year in a row is what I'm hearing. I had marked down that you guys are on the team for 2022, 23, 24, but that's only three of them, right? So you guys have just been tearing up the CCWHA for the last 6 years.
Correct.
Who is a team in the conference that maybe gives you like the hardest time, or like those are the closest games where you like you always know it's going to come down to the wire when you play this team?
We got to give it to Indiana Tech. Like there's lots of other teams that we play, like U of M, Michigan. Like they're a good team that we play against too. That's always like kind of back and forth, but Indiana Tech, it's fast, like rough. You never know who's going to come out of that game with a win. Like both of us work really, really hard. And we saw that in that game. We were down 2-0 in that game.
Yeah.
Going like we were down 2-0. Like it was very scary because like they came out flying. We didn't come out the best. But like that's how most of our games go all season with them. It's like one of us comes out good, the other doesn't. And it just goes back and forth all year long.
That game went to overtime, correct? Like, a lot of overtime.
Three overtimes.
I'm looking at the scoreboard in the background of this picture. 3-2 final in the sixth period with 3 minutes left. Very close to four overtimes. What's that game like, you know, in the intermission? Like, are you going back between, like, in the locker room? You're like, wow, I can't believe we're going to go do that again.
To an extent, yeah. Like, we all have our moments. in the dressing room. We kind of let ourselves think about it and really take in what just happened out there kind of thing. And just got to make sure, like, when we go out onto the ice next, like, everybody has their role and they have to perform what their role is in order for our team dynamic to work and to have that unity. I will say our team is also really good at going around the room and talking about what they see. From one person's perspective to the other, it could be very different. That's exactly what we do. We sit there, we get like Chloe's perspective from the other end of the ice to like a defenseman and a forward, even like from all classes, from freshmen to seniors. Everybody has a voice and everybody gets to kind of chime in whenever they want or however they want and talk about like what to do next in order to up our game a little bit here.
And it's clearly evident you guys end up winning in overtime. You beat Indiana Tech. You head to Nationals. Obviously had a ticket punched already going to Nationals, but probably even sweeter to have that conference championship again for the sixth year in a row. You beat Arizona State to start off the tournament with a 5-0 victory. I was able to stick around for the entirety of this one, but you guys throttled Dearborn. There was never a chance that they were coming out of there with a victory. And you guys had played them a little tight like a couple of weeks earlier in the playoffs, 3-1 win. Like, what was the difference in this one?
I'm going to add to that, too, and give them credit. They actually beat us in January. And then, again, we had another close game at playoffs. The second that we got off that bus in St. Louis, like, we knew what we were there to do. We knew that there was, like, no room for mistakes whatsoever. We knew that every game that we showed up to had to be our best game. Michigan saw that. They saw it a couple weeks before, too, I think. We beat them like 9-1 or 10-1 or something. It's bad to say, but we wanted them to feel like they just like they didn't belong to like beat us. Like, we're not the team that you can compete with. And I think we proved that that day.
There was kind of some bad blood going on between Dearborn and U of M, right? Like, obviously two Michigan schools, they look identical and like they go toe to toe. And then it was like Dearborn goes through all that and like you guys just never let them get started.
Yeah, on to that point, I think from all of the games prior to this and like the feeling of us when we lost against them and then kind of like aggravating feeling of like only beating them by like a small amount. And like you can just almost feel that tension between that team versus your team. And so we stepped into that rink. You could see it in the way that they were carrying themselves, that they were like, we've got this in the bag. Like, we're totally in their head. Like, they are so beatable. Whereas we walked in and we were like, we're angry, we're mad, and you will never beat us today. And that was just like the determining factor between all of it, because we just knew that we were going to come in this game and show them no mercy pretty much.
Now, Tess, you mentioned a little bit of chirping. I want to know who does the most chirping on your team? Who's like getting after it after the whistles, or like maybe even in practice, like you could always hear them no matter where they are on the ice.
One of our freshmen, Taylor Kincaid, loves to throw in a good chirp. Taylor Gregan, she likes to have some words. She's small, she's mighty, so you don't really want to mess with her. A lot of them, they're just throwing it in there, and it is actually quite humorous. It is amusing to watch and listen to all the time.
22 Mac Parent is one feisty little freshman. She always has something good to say, even if we are beating them, even if we are losing, even if the game is tied. She will always have something to say, and she says it with confidence as well.
Love that. We need more chirping. There's always somebody chirping. Never a dull moment. Let's go to the semifinal game, because you guys played Midland. Even from our perspective, looking at the women's side, it's like, well, you look at the rankings, it's like Liberty, Midland, 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 Liberty, Midland, Liberty, Liberty, Liberty. Like, all year long, it was kind of between those two schools. Like, did you guys ever feel like maybe you were being left out, or did you know all year long like you could compete with Liberty and Midland?
We got to watch those standings over and over and over again. Yes, in some aspects, it was kind of defeating in a way, or like in a sense that like you were looking at it and being like, okay, but like this is what we've done. Like, this is what we've accomplished. Or like when we went and beat Liberty, it was like, okay, but we beat them, but we're still not moving. In a way, you can almost see it as like, oh, like that sucks. And you can really like let it sink in. But at the same time, I think with the girls on our team, it was almost like fuel to the fire. It was almost a moment where like we wanted to prove everybody wrong. Like, we are the number one. we need to be up there, and like we deserve to be up there. So like seeing them flip back and forth and us just stay kind of stagnant was a very like, not a humbling moment, but it was just like, okay, now like we gotta really work 10 times harder to show these people like who we are, kind of thing.
And Chloe, what do you think, like, you guys end up winning 5-3, but what was like the key difference for you guys in that semifinal defeating Midland?
That game was honestly a chaotic mess for me. My pad actually snapped with like, I think, 20 seconds left in warmups. I was all over the place. I was freaking out because I went into that game like super nervous. Like I saw their standings all year. We never got to play them. I was freaking out a little bit. And so like Carter's trying to calm me down. Tess is like, calm down. I couldn't calm down. And then we got on the ice and we came out like, I didn't even know who Midland was when we first got on the ice. Like they were like non-existent when we got on the ice. They came back a little bit and it got a little nerve-wracking. They were kind of like weird bounces. I will not make a single comment on the calls that went in. They either tied it up or like it got pretty close to being a tie. Someone said something like during a timeout or something and everyone's like face just like snapped and we're like, oh shit, like we actually have to win this game, like we can't risk losing this game. And we pulled it off. Midland put up a good fight, but no matter what the standings said, I don't think they were a match to us at all.
And so you guys punch a ticket to the national championship game and you guys had the advantage, right? Like you had the first semifinal. You now get to watch Liberty and Minot. Like any hockey player, right, you're probably like, I want this game to go to like 7 overtimes, like I want them to be exhausted for tomorrow. And then, you know, it goes to overtime and Minot wins. And it's like, oh my gosh, like we are going to have a new national champion. Like it is crazy. And you have to tip your cap to Liberty because they've been on like this tremendous run. For you guys, like, do you kind of take a step back and you're like, oh my gosh, like we're playing Minot, not Liberty? Or is it like 5 seconds later, you snap out of it and you're like, all right, we have a game to play?
Yeah. So it was quite funny because our entire team was actually in our hotel room, all sitting on the beds. It wasn't necessarily like we get to play Minot in the finals. It's or not like we get to, like we have to. Like it wasn't one of those, like, or like it would have been the same with Liberty. It's like we get to play this game. We get to like have this moment where like we can change history. There's obviously going to be a new winner and like we want it to be us. As much as everybody else so says, like that's when you start mentally preparing for the final game. But in actuality, our team had been preparing for a final game since the day we all stepped in the dressing room. And it was said by both of our coaches, like, we are here to win a national championship. In that moment, it was, everybody go to bed. You're already mentally prepared, but like, now you dial it in. It doesn't matter who we play. We are playing our game. We're sticking to it because that's how we succeed in the end. So that was kind of just like, everybody was just like, now we're fired up. We're so ready. Go get ready for bed and let's do this thing, kind of thing.
Chloe, on the flip side of that, you're preparing for the game, but is there already conversation like, guys, like how cool would it be if like we won and the men's team won? Like, did you guys have that thought?
100%. Like that's like whether Liberty or Minot like had advanced. It's been a topic of conversation since the men's team won. Before we even started the tournament, like we knew, we're like, okay, we're not letting the men's team win without us. Like, we're just not going to let that happen. Tess said, like, when coach was like, okay, everybody go to bed. Like, I don't know if anyone actually got a good night's sleep. Liberty had lost out. They put in a good game against ASU. They went into overtime. Minot, they went into overtime. All of their games, I think, throughout the tournament. We just knew that there was going to be a new winner. And I think that's what was so exciting, was like, it wasn't going to be Liberty anymore.
The national championship game was a great game as well. I kind of alluded to it earlier, like the third period, you have that cushion and you're looking up the scoreboard. Like, was that the slowest a clock has ever ticked off, Tess? What were you feeling when you were on the ice lining up for faceoffs or even on the bench, just like looking up at that thing?
You said it best. It was, you were counting down the seconds. It felt like time was going by so extremely slow. But at the same time, it was one of those things where you're like, I can't be distracted by the time. I have a game to play. Like, we still have to finish the game in order to win. But it got down to about, I think it was like the 6-minute mark. And I looked up at Coach Carter and I was like, hey, we're going to be a natty champ. And he was like, go on the ice. He's like, get out there. I'm like, okay. It was almost like I could feel the switch. I could feel Minot feeling defeated. Like, we would go into a battle and they were just like, kind of thing. Like, it was almost like a big sigh. Like, you could feel their body react to like pressure on them that entire time, or every single time you got off the ice. I saw everybody's eyes look up at the clock, look back down, continue watching the game go on. Or I would look over into the stands. For me personally, I always know where my parents are, like at every game, like I always know. And I could see my mom doing her little like giddy jumping up and down, my dad like rubbing her back, like shaking his hat, like doing whatever. Like, I could see them already getting excited. As the clock died down, it just got more and more exciting, and we're like, this is it. Like, this is our moment.
Chloe, was there a moment for you? Like, was it that 6 minute mark? Was it a little less time on the clock? Because I mean, as the goalie, you're like the star of the show the minute that that clock ticks down. Like, what was going through your mind, maybe in preparation for the dog pile, like at the end of the buzzer? Or were you just kind of like locked in, like, hey, I'm just going to keep playing the same way I've been playing this whole tournament?
So for the first like two periods, I think I blacked out because like Minot got a breakaway 20 seconds in and they almost scored. And I think like if they do score in that, completely different game. But for the first two periods, I blacked out. Like, I was so dialed, I didn't know what was going on. The score just kept going up. And I have this thing where like I go skate towards the glass just to like get out of the crease for a little bit. And I'm like sitting there and I can like see like the Minot fans so stressed out, and it couldn't make, I just smiled every time like I looked in the stands and I was seeing them like so stressed and defeated. Like, I was just smiling. And so like I think it was around like the 7 minute mark, and I just like knew that like we were winning, and like I was just not gonna let another goal in because that'd be so embarrassing if I'm like smiling at them. And we ended up losing, but we won, and I blacked out for most of it, actually. Yeah,
I gotta ask too, because I think you guys have one of the best looking jerseys, and I thought it was so cool that you got to wear the new gold jerseys in the national championship game. When you guys did that first photo shoot, like, did you ever imagine like that's the jersey you'd be wearing when you won the national championship?
I didn't think so, and mainly because of the standing that we were in. I never expected to be facing Minot in the finals. I always thought it was going to be Midland or Liberty. And with them being the higher seed, like, we wouldn't have been wearing the jerseys that we wore that day. It was just like a nice moment because we only got to wear them for like the last half of the season. And to wear them like in a national tournament, looking like with how nice they looked, it was like, it was so sick.
Definitely looked the part. Team photo looks fantastic. We're always trying to do our best to promote the women's game. Like I mentioned, there's not as many women's ACHA teams are there as there are men's teams, but I kind of wanted to give you each the opportunity. If there's maybe like one thing, whether it's college hockey as a whole, women's hockey as a whole, we've obviously seen the growth of the pro game in the last year with the PWHL. What's something that you would like to see maybe on the ACHA side of things in the women's game, whether it come from, you know, Adrian, or whether it come from the ACHA itself? Like, what's something you'd like to see moving forward in the women's game?
More support and like just like social media and getting it out. Like, when I first started looking around for colleges, I didn't even know ACHA was a thing. Like, from like my understanding, I knew it was CIS and NCAA, and then we have like a Canadian like underneath CIS or U Sport, whatever it's called now. But I know that a lot of ACHA teams like don't get a lot of support. They don't get a lot of like funding as much as like an NCAA team does. Promoting that, like, I'd say like a good quality CHA D1 team is equivalent to like NCAA D3 teams, even some lower NCAA D1 teams. And it's just like not acknowledged as much. And so just putting that out on social media and making it like known for younger girls to like look into these programs as well.
I totally agree with Chloe. We don't necessarily get as much funding as obviously other teams do. What we've done, like, we still put in the same amount of work. We still are playing the same game of hockey. Being able to have that name out for us in such a positive manner and having that projected on sites and obviously social media would gain a huge surrounding and audience. And I think that would be very beneficial in order for like all of our teams to grow, or even places that don't necessarily have a team at this current moment to potentially produce a team full of young girls or women or anybody who is willing to set forth that opportunity to play hockey. Again, like Chloe said, like, it is really important to be able to get the name out and promote people and female hockey as much as possible.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I was reading this in the write-up on the website. The first women's national championship in Adrian College history. Was that something that you guys knew prior? So how cool is that to be a part of Test Authority? You're the captain of the team, first in the university's history, Adrian College, the first women's national championship team. Like, that is an astounding feat.
Words cannot describe how outstanding that feels. It feels like such an incredible moment. And to be able to be like, I led my team here, but also knowing that like these girls put in so much work. It was just such a moment of like appreciation for them, for myself, for my family, for everybody who would support us. And I was just like, yeah, again, it was just such an incredible moment to be able to have had and to be able to experience with the people that I did this year. Because I remember saying it at one point, I'm like, we will never be in this position at the same time to have this amazing group of girls with me and with each other and have that close of a bond was like the cherry on top of winning. We have so much love and like respect to be able to be there and do the things that we did and accomplished was just amazing. And I got to stand back and kind of just like see it and watch everybody celebrate. I was like, oh my God, like we did it. We are able to be the first people. We made history for our institution, for our program. It was so amazing and I can't describe it.
Yeah, I thought that was the coolest fact of this whole thing, right? Because like we've been covering the game for a while now. You've seen the national championships that the men's team has brought in. So you knew that there was one on the men's side, right? But when I was reading that, I was like, wow, like that is an amazing accomplishment. Congratulations to the two of you. Congratulations to your team. Thank you so much for joining us and wish you best of luck, Tess, next year in your senior year, and then Chloe in school as well.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Once again, thank you to Chloe and Tess for joining us this week. Again, we didn't hear from all of our national champions. So if you're tuning into this and, you know, you're someone from Lawrence Tech or UMiami and you want someone from your team to join the pod, more than happy to get them on during the off season here. But we'll probably mix in a couple of other interviews from some more familiar guests here in the next couple of weeks. All right, we got a fun segment of the show here. Fitzy mentioned, you know, college baseball tournament is upon us. It'll be kicking off Friday with the Super Regionals. And I was looking at all the teams here. One, I had no idea there were 64 teams in this thing. I did not realize it was like the level of basketball because I feel like it doesn't get talked about like that. I know the format is different. It's not a bracket. Fitzy, help me out here. Is there a regional and then there's...
The thing they're doing right now is regionals, double elimination. They set it up as a bracket. Like, yeah, it doesn't work like a bracket. You go regionals to super regionals.
Okay, and so we're not on regionals. The super regionals yet. Okay.
Correct.
But looking at these teams, just like if you're a sicko like us and you would look at your NCAA men's basketball bracket and then just pick the teams that are you're more familiar with in the ACHA and AAU, like we probably would. We are going to run through the different regionals here and pick winners based on who probably has the best hockey team on campus. And I think it's a fun exercise because we have some fun regionals that I think might spark some debates. We have some other regionals that, you know, there's only one team that even has a hockey team on campus. Then we have, you know, a couple teams that have baseball teams. And I found out today that they have hockey teams. So I think we should highlight those schools especially. So we'll run through the list. We'll start with the Athens Regional hosted by Georgia. You have number one, Georgia. Number two, UNCW. Number three, Georgia Tech. And number four, Army. So right off the hop, we have a regional with two ACHA M2 teams, an AAU D1 team, and an AAU D2 team here. And I think most people listening might look at this and go, oh, Georgia's probably the best team in this one. And then you might get some heat from the UNCW crowd because, you know, they're ACHA M2. They beat RIT in an exhibition. They went to New York, so they beat an ACHA M1 team. But I think I would go Army in this regional because they also have an NCAA Division I team, as David Herman is acknowledging to me. But I think if we were going off of ACHA, I think I would take them. You know, they were a hard team to play against in ACHA M2 Nationals this year. But Herm, thank you for reminding me there because we are going to include NCAA Division I teams. And there's a couple more examples of that. So Army takes the cake in the Athens Regional. But I think you folks listening can now understand the concept of what we're going to do here. We'll move along to the College Station Regional hosted by Texas A&M. Number one, Texas A&M, number 2, Louisiana, number 3, Texas, and number 4, Grambling. So the only two teams here we're talking about are ACHA M2, and we have Texas A&M and Texas. Now, these two teams, I believe, played each other twice this year, so we might have to go look at the result. This is a big deal in Texas, Texas A&M. Okay, so Texas A&M won the most recent matchup. I think they split this season. You know, as experts here, we get to choose who we want coming out of this regional.
Longhorns. It can't be anybody else. A&M is a cult. A&M's a cult.
I mean, both teams have great jerseys. If the tiebreaker's jerseys, I'm taking Texas.
I think that's a valid statement.
We can pull up the final ACHA M2 rankings. That might give us a better feel for things. And that would give us the University of Texas. They finished in the West as the number 12 team. Chapel Hill Regional hosted by North Carolina. You have number 1, North Carolina. Number 2, LSU. Number 3, Wofford. And number 4, LIU. Wofford does not have a college hockey team that we know about, but you have UNC, their ACHA M2. LSU, Collins, you might know, I know you got a buddy at LSU, but I believe they're M3. They might not even be in a league yet. I have no idea, so I put a question mark next to them. Deciding factor here is LIU being an NCAA Division I team. They would take the cake in this one. It is worth noting that they are the most recent NCAA team to fall to a ACHA team when they fell to Liberty. So I think we have to do our due diligence there and bring that up as well.
I don't know. Anytime LIU is brought up, or you got to mention, oh, you remember that time LIU lost to Liberty? Forever attached to that program, and I feel bad for them for it.
The regional, too, if we're going off it, it's double elimination, so someone would have to beat LIU twice to knock them out.
Very, very good point there. We'll head over to Charlottesville for the next one. We have Virginia, Mississippi State, St. John's, and Penn. The only two schools with hockey teams here are Virginia and Penn. Both M2 schools here, and the boys at Penn a couple years in a row now have made some noise in the regional tournament, so I think they'd be the easy decision in this one.
Penn's the easy decision by far. They beat Millersville like 14-3 or something like that, something nutty. But shout out Daniel Stevenson though at Virginia, big cock hockey legend over there.
And they would get bonus points for having in the rink. They would host the regional at Class of 23 Arena, too. Moving along, the Clemson Regional is hosted by Clemson, of course. You have the Tigers, you have Vanderbilt, Coastal Carolina, and High Point in this one. So I believe 4 AAU D2 teams in this one. A couple of those ACCHL teams are a little confusing because they play AAU and ACHA schedules. So my gut here says we go with High Point. They made it the furthest of any of these schools in the AAU tournament. They won the ACCHL. And getting any rebuttals here? Vandy, you know, made some noise at Nationals as well. Coastal has won the ACC a couple times.
I have to say this is probably the hardest one to pick, just from a baseball perspective too. Like, because Vandy is always a wagon. And I think Clemson, I think they're the one seed in the country. Fitzy, am I wrong with that? Are they the number one team in the country?
They are the number 6 team in the country. Tennessee's one.
But yeah, Vandy is a really strong team. I would say Vandy from just an AAU perspective. I don't know why. I really like their jerseys. And also their goalie has an NCAA D3 background, having played at Middlebury. I don't know. I'm kind of going with them.
My fun fact for this regional is I've been to the Clemson baseball stadium. Fun fact is they don't have a dirt warning track. They actually have a hill in front of their fence. So something along the lines of the coach didn't like the way the dirt looked as the warning track. If you go to the field, it's actually slightly slanted right before the wall, so it's a little hill as you go in. So when you turn on the regional this weekend, you see that on TV, you can point that out to your folks, and you'll look like the smartest guy in the room. Corvallis Regional, hosted by Oregon State at number 1, UC Irvine at 2, Nichols at 3, and Tulane at 4. This one is almost a complete wash. You have UC Irvine is the only school on this list with a team. They are ACHA M2, and I do have a fun fact about UC Irvine. They are the Anteaters. That's a cool mascot, and a hockey jersey that reads Anteaters across the front with an anteater. I mean, that's got to be worth something here. That would be a jersey I'd be looking to add to my collection. These California schools, there's another on this list, but I think maybe they get swept under the rug. You know, the West Coast games, I'm in bed by 9 o'clock sometimes, and I'm not turning on Black Dog for an 11 o'clock puck drop. So I think we miss out on a couple of these teams, but I made sure to give them the follow back on Instagram today. And Herm, you mentioned it. How does Oregon State not have a team?
with the success of the Ducks, it's only a matter of time, right? Someone at Oregon State has to listen to the podcast and has to have seen the success of kids that have taken destiny into their own hands and started programs. It's got to be around the corner, right? I don't know what the rank situation looks like. Teams have made it work before.
I always get Oregon State and Oklahoma State confused, but that brings up a good point. They're both OSUs that are black and orange. And you look at Oklahoma State, right? They added hockey and they instantly have a rivalry with Oklahoma. And you can see what that did. So I think Oregon State could do something similar there. Heading over to the Fayetteville region, we have another washout. Arkansas, Louisiana Tech, Kansas State, and Southeast Missouri State. Arkansas is moving up to ACHA M2 next season as the only hockey team in this regional. They would take it. Moving along to the Greenville regional hosted by East Carolina, you have number one East Carolina, number two Wake Forest, number three VCU, and number four Evansville. ECU and Wake Forest are two ACHA M2 teams. Who are we taking in this one, boys? We get ECU or the Demon Deacons. Both great sets of uniforms, too. Here I am trying to pull up the Wake Forest schedule from last season, and they don't have it on their website. We got to get these guys hooked up with Optimex and make that easy on ourselves here. I'm going to take Wake Forest. I think ECU hasn't had too great a years the last couple of years. Wake Forest has kind of been on the come up. They've challenged some of those teams in the triangle as well. So I'll take them heading into this regional. Let's go. We got, Herm, did you want to, we got here, what do we, oh, geez. A Wix website from 2017 here from VCU Hockey. Yep, they used to have a team. And look, and back in 2017, they were scheduled to play Wake Forest. Look at that. So, yeah, we need the Rams to have a team again. That would be awesome in Richmond. You'd have a rivalry right there with the Richmond Spiders. And, UVA is close by as well. So we'll head down to Tennessee for the next regional. One Tennessee, three Indiana, two Southern Miss, and four Northern Kentucky. I put those out of order on the sheet there. That's why I'm reading them like that. But Indiana takes this one. The national champions, of course. Fitzy, you going to be tuning in to watch the boys in Crimson and Cream?
I think the hockey team would take care of business, but the baseball boys are kind of getting fed to the wolves with that draw. So I'll definitely watch, but I don't think it's going to end well for the Hoosiers.
In the Lexington regional, we have another good hockey one here. Kentucky, Indiana State, Illinois, and Western Michigan. I think this would get really interesting if we were going by ACHA teams, because you got Kentucky, solid ACHA M2 program. Illinois has faded in the last couple years at the M1 level. And then you have Western Michigan, an M1 team who's kind of found themselves at the bottom of the rankings the last couple years. But Western Michigan will take the cake here with their NCAA Division I team. The Lawson Lunatics, they make that some of the best home ice advantage in the country when it comes to college hockey. Moving on to the Norman Regional, we were already talking about Oklahoma. You got Oklahoma, Duke, and UConn. Oh, can't forget about Oral Roberts in this one. It's a shame. Oral Roberts, a team that made a lot of noise in March Madness a couple years ago, does not have a hockey team. But UConn does have a hockey team, and they play at the NCAA level, so they would take the cake in this one. This next regional might break some friendships here, but we're going down to Raleigh. You have NC State, South Carolina, James Madison, and Bryant. NC State, ACHA M2, James Madison, ACHA M2, Bryant, ACHA M2, but you have South Carolina, AAU D1 national champs. If we had NC State and South Carolina go toe-to-toe, who is taking the cake? I'm going to give a cop-out answer, guys. And these two teams will play each other next year, so it will be decided, and somebody can come back and clip this or whatever. For the purposes of integrity here, you have to give it to South Carolina because they are the national champions.
They have a national championship. NC State does not. Herm, please feel free when NC State beats South Carolina to clip that. I'm going to roll with the Cox.
Here's my thing, and this is strictly going off of last year. Based on the things I've heard with the Frozen Finley success, you know, anyone who was interested in wanting to go to those schools, it was too late to apply. So I think you're going to see an influx of talent coming in for UNC and NC State this year and the year after based on the events of Frozen Finley. So I think NC State's going to have a pretty darn good team this year. And, you know, South Carolina is always going to be in the mix coming off their national championship. Because of recent success, you know, NC State hasn't made it out of regionals. They haven't been to nationals in maybe since they were in Frisco, right? So, I guess they went to nationals during the COVID year out at UMary. So, you know, they went on a run there. But I think you got to give, South Carolina their flowers here. Heading out west at the Santa Barbara Regional, UC Santa Barbara, San Diego, Oregon, and Fresno State. So a couple of well-known schools out west. Oregon probably takes the cake in this one, ACHA M1. The others are all M2 schools. Oklahoma State, we have the Stillwater Regional, Oklahoma State, Nebraska, Florida, Niagara. I think this one could get interesting if we weren't talking about Niagara's M1 or NCAA D1 teams here, but they're taking the cake as the hockey school in this one here. We'll go to Tallahassee for the next regional, Florida State, Alabama, UCF, and Stetson. Stetson's another school. I'd like to see them have hockey. I think that's a maybe that's because I had a teacher in high school who went to Stetson. That's another school down in Florida that I think, actually, now that I'm mentioning it, I think they used to play Embry-Riddle way, way, way back in the day. I remember hearing Bob Joyce tell us about that when we went down to Daytona. So I think you take Alabama in this one, but my question was, do you take Alabama's M1 team or do you take their AAU D1 team?
I think you take their AAU team. You don't take their M1 team.
I almost agree with you there, Collins. Our last one, we will head to Tucson. Fitting, we will close with a team we led the show with. Arizona, Dallas Baptist, West Virginia, and Grand Canyon. All field ACHA teams. DBU is the lone M3 while the rest play in M1. I think this one's an easy one. We saw Grand Canyon, you know, surge at the end of the season last year. They had a good run in the second half that propelled them to the national tournament. Arizona and GCU both lost in the national tournament, but I think I would take GCU based off of the success they had in the second semester, unless there's any complaints. You know, that's your college baseball preview. And, you know, if you're a betting man and you're looking for picks, we just gave them. So love seeing the amount of hockey schools we got going here. At the end, we'll certainly be some entertaining baseball. Watching things over to 611 Thoughts, we have an update on the ACCHL, kind of the news that shocked the club hockey world last week with the announcement that Alabama, NC State, UNC, and Louisville will be forming a new conference to begin play in 2025-26. And, you know, as we do with every show that we put out, we get some feedback. You know, a couple days passed after the episode went out, but I did hear rumblings that there are some big names looking to join the ACCHL in time for that first season in 2025-26. So we mentioned they have four teams to begin with. They're probably going to need more than that to get started in 2025-26, but it sounds like they will have no problem filling the rest of that conference up with some exciting names. So I want to kind of give you an update on that. That brings us to the end of our show. A pretty brief one here. Like I said, we're jumping right into summer here. We'll probably take the next week off. We'll get into that summer cycle of doing three episodes in a row and then taking a break to kind of digest things. And, you know, there's not always off-season news every week, so we do the best we can. And then maybe that makes that bye week a little more special, a little more news on that episode that we come off of it. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Yeah, like I mentioned, looking forward to a trip to Seattle to catch the boys, which will always be a good one here. Getting ready to head down to Boston to start my new job. So looking forward to that as well. We will see you all in a couple weeks.
See you, boys.